The Wagon Train, 30 miles east of Fury. Once more, Blake had called a halt to the train's progress by calling out Circle the Wagons, much to Olin Whaler's disgust, and helped find enough wood to make a fire. Again, it wasn't much of a fire, but enough to heat up their beans and roast a few prairie hens that Randy had shot along the way. Laura and Seth sat beside him as they enjoyed their dinner in the fading firelight. Olin, his wife Lena, and their two boys, Thor and Loki, sat nearer the flames, and the two boys eyed the last of the spitted fowl. They were in their teens, 16 and 14, and Blake imagined that it took a great deal of food to fill them up. He supposed he'd find out for sure when Seth grew to be their age.
Randy, would you mind if the Whaler boys polished off your last hen?
Sure. Help yourselves.
Okay, boys.
The boys descended on that prairie hen like starving wolves on a fresh deer carcass.
I guess riding all day must be awful tiring.
The laughter had come from Becky Mankiller, Randy's wife. She was a tiny thing compared to Randy's height. Blake doubted she was even 5 feet tall with her shoes on, but she was sharp as a tack.
Yes, ma'am, it is.
The younger one, Loki, nodded his agreement. His mouth was filled with prairie hen, from the wishbone, his favorite part.
Slow down, Loki. You'll choke yourself.
Loki smiled and slowed his chewing.
Do you suppose we'll be seeing any Indians out there?
I'm praying that we won't, Thor. They're bad business.
How strange to call a gangly, red-headed boy by the name of an ancient god. Thor looked no more like his imaginary namesake than that dismembered prairie hen he was eating looked like a soaring phoenix bird. Becky and Randy Mankiller had no children, having just gotten married a few months ago, but Blake had no doubt that Becky would be a stellar mother. She reminded him a bit of his Laura, in fact.
Why, Thor? Did you set your heart on...
The boy just wanted to see some Injuns, that's all.
Well, I hope you told him he was lucky that he hadn't.
It's none of your damn business, Harvey.
Wallace Harvey worked for the Mankillers driving their second wagon, which was filled with everything a rockbreaker might need, plus some to sell.
All's I was saying was...
Enough, everybody.
Richard!
Gentlemen, let's hold off the Indian talk for now, all right? There'll be time enough for it when we get to Fury.
He wants to see an Indian so bad, he can just take a look at me. Or a fourth of me, anyhow.
Enough out of you too, Randy.
The Apache Camp. Having made sure that they were no longer being pursued, Lone Wolf had ordered his men to stop and make camp in the shelter of the low hills, far to the south of the white settlement. He was presently sitting next to a cook fire, which was circled by his best braves, the ones who remained alive at any rate. His losses had been much greater than he had expected. Whitehair was an older brave who had garnered his name from the silver streak that ran from the part in his hair down through one of his braids, a gift from a Mexican's fire stick.
Lone Wolf, we cannot go home without stealing something from the whites. We will be greatly shamed.
I know that, Whitehair. We stop here. Take a few days to lick our wounds, then go back, stronger and better armed than before. We will steal much. We will take many cattle and horses, and we will go back with honor. Take heart, my brothers. You will see.
We did badly at their hands the first time. My brother Runs Fast was killed, and Long Tortoise, the brother of my first wife. What makes you think we will do any better the next time we meet them in battle?
Because we have stopped close to a stand of trees, which will make for good arrow strangles, Coyote. Because we have brought with us enough flint to make the finest arrowheads and spearheads. But most of all, because they will not be expecting us. They will not be ready. They will still be soft and licking their wounds from our first attack.
Lone Wolf had spoken well because the men around the fire seemed to relax in their new solidarity. They nodded their agreement. Good. This was how it should be. Lone Wolf was pleased.
We now know how they fight. They will continue to fight in this manner. We will make ladders to lean against their walls. We will get inside, and once we do, we will conquer!
At this statement, several braves gave nods of agreement. It seemed everyone was in accord on at least one point, that once things came to hand-to-hand combat with the whites, the Apache would emerge overwhelmingly victorious. Had they not proven this to be fact time and time again? It was the truth, and they all knew it. Lone Wolf smiled to himself.
It will be good!
Fury. Jason and Dr. Morelli had chosen the part of the livery still in good shape, the part that still had a roof, that is, in which to house the wounded. They'd moved Deputy Wanamaker there, along with Raleigh Bigston, who'd taken an arrow out in the street. Gil Collins was spending his nights there too, being treated for the burns his torso had received when he was hit by a flaming arrow. Sometime today, Raleigh had suffered much the same fate, although Jason had no idea where he'd been. At least he hadn't had a flask in his hand when he'd been hit. That would have been just the thing the town needed, a fat, flaming cockney torch. Always good for the ego. All in all, Jason figured that there were about 30 men, perhaps 32, in the stable, including the wounded that they'd picked up on their way back to town. They'd lost 7 men altogether, but Jason thought that they had done fairly well percentage-wise, so far. Unlike the rest of the men, he wasn't so certain they were out of the woods. Apache were tricky, and you could always count on them to do exactly the opposite of what you expected, even if you hadn't thought of it yet. He figured that the last thing he'd ever do was ride out and try to shoot dice with them to get them to go away. The trick might have worked with the Comanche, but with Apache, it'd be a sure and certain way to end up dead. Or worse. Apache didn't have a sense of humor, let alone a sense of decency. Jason didn't want to find out what worse was. Actually, he didn't even want to find out what dead was like. He'd seen enough of it to figure that he wouldn't like it. Not one tiny little bit. But tonight he had to convince the rest of the town to stop being so happy and cocksure of itself. He'd done a great deal of thinking on the way back to town, and he decided that it wasn't going to be easy. They had only managed to chase the Apache away because they'd surprised them and had been hidden by their own dust. The Apache hadn't known how few they were, how outnumbered. It was a good trick and had worked once, but it wouldn't work again. The jail door opened and Saul Cohen walked in.
Am I disturbing you? I could come back.
No, no. What can I do for you, Saul? What? Sorry, Saul. Don't mind me. I'm about used up.
That's what I was afraid of.
What you getting at, Saul?
I'm not so sure those Apache are done with us, Jason. Now, don't go believing that I'm a millstone around everybody's neck, or that I'm making like the boy who cried wolf. It's just that I...
Whoa, up there. You're thinking right, Saul. I don't think this thing is done yet either.
Yes, I expect it isn't.
Never say I expect when you're talking about Apache. But having said that, I'd say we could expect them back any day now.
They're just regrouping?
We've got to be ready for the next onslaught, and I mean more than ready.
So, what do we do?
Other than getting everybody to stop celebrating?
Salmon Kendall is making a speech.
Crud.
Both men fell into silence. After 5 long minutes, Jason stood up.
You have it?
Jason walked across the room toward the pot-bellied stove and lifted the coffee pot.
Only if you mean the coffee. Want some?
I could drink.
Jason poured out 2 cups. He handed Saul one, then returned to his chair. He didn't drink, though. He kept turning the metal cup in his hands, around and around, and staring at the mottled blue enamel.
Does that help for thinking?
Not really.
Oh.
Jason put the cup down. He kept pushing the cup around with his index finger, still staring down at its steaming black-brown contents. Steam. He thought it looked like smoke rising from the cup. And then, quite suddenly, something went click inside his brain. He gripped the front of his desk.
Saul? Aren't those wagons carrying oil?
Yes. A whole wagon full of whale oil. And half a load of kerosene, too. That's why we piled all that lumber over the top of it. Remember? Why? Is your lamp running low?
Come on. Come on. We gotta start everybody digging.
Digging?
Yes, yes. We've got to dig a whatchacallit, a moat.
Saul still didn't understand it, but here it was after midnight, and he was shoveling hard chunks of caliche shoulder to shoulder with Mayor Kendall and Colorado Gooding, digging a ditch about 10 feet from the stockade and parallel to it, and digging it 3 feet deep and 6 feet across. Jason's orders. He hadn't said anything, but Saul was beginning to have his doubts about Jason. Did he intend to fill this moat with water? Did he think it would stop the Apache for a second? But he kept shoveling just the same. And shoveling wasn't easy. The ground was hard caliche soil. The crust of it was, anyway. And he figured they could have built a castle out of the top blocks they were cutting. Jason was having them pile the caliche into a wall on the stockade side of the moat. Just how this would protect them was beyond Saul. It was beyond Colorado, too.
The boy's crazy as a loon.
What the heck are we digging this thing for? You'd think he'd confide in the mayor.
Saul imagined that all the men stretching down the wall, shovels working, were of much the same curious mind. It would have helped a great deal if Jason had given him, or someone, anyone, an idea of what was going on in that flaxen head of his. But he hadn't, and now here they were, digging a moat by lamplight. He thought back over their conversation, the part before Jason put them all to digging. Jason had asked him about the oil, hadn't he? But what good would that do? A wagon load wasn't enough to fill this blasted moat they were digging. And besides, the dry, thirsty ground would drink that measly load of oil straight off. He had a sudden vision of them pouring barrel after barrel of water on the ground, which acted like a giant sponge.
Ugh. What's the matter with you? Look like you just seen a ghost.
It's nothing. Nothing at all.
Jason was on the northern side of the stockade with about 20 men, and they were performing the same duties as the men to the south. He'd put extra men on the south because that was the side the Apache would likely attack first. Jason might not even need a trench to the north, but he wasn't about to take any chances. He dug like the devil himself was on his tail, dug like his life depended on it, because he figured it did. He'd had words with the driver of the oil wagon after he gave orders and put Saul and the others to work. The driver thought that the oil would soak in all right, but that enough would stay near the surface that it would burn, especially if there was clay down there under the caliche to block it soaking in any further. And there was clay. At least, he remembered that Saul had hit about 10 feet of it when he was digging the well. Jason hoped that the soil was the same outside the town walls. He'd staked all their lives on it, in fact.
Don't think about it. Just dig. Just dig.
One half mile from the town's southern wall, an Indian pony stopped and its rider slipped artfully to the ground. Hunching low, even though there was no one there to see him, Strangle's coyote scurried to a clump of brush and stretched out low, his belly pressed to the ground. His eyes were already accustomed to the dark because he'd been riding for hours, riding back up north from the place where his people had stopped. And so he could see through the night as well as a man could. Better than most, in fact. The moon was full, the sky bereft of clouds. And what he saw to the north disturbed him, although he couldn't say why. White men were doing what they usually did, which was to act crazy. Maybe 30 of them were outside the wall on the south side. They had carried lamps like small campfires with them, and they were digging, digging like fools. At first he thought that perhaps they were going to bury their dead in the long trench, but then he realized that the grave was far too big to hold their dead, even using the most optimistic count. It was a great puzzle, and he wished for a moment that Lone Wolf had sent Toad That Hops or Dreamstirrer instead of him. Someone who had more insight into the mysteries of the whites than he had. Someone who could understand what they were up to. It was beyond him. Jason, having gone to sleep at 3 a.m, was up by 5. But when there was no sign of an Apache attack by 7, he had the north gate opened and 2 wagons driven out beyond the stockade. Moving slowly, he oversaw the unloading of barrel after barrel of whale oil until they had gone around the entire town and come around to the south gate. While the men poured out the whale oil sparingly into the ditch, Jason and a few more men took the kerosene around the same way, but they didn't empty those smaller kegs. Instead, they put them down in the ditch, a ceiling board cracked and broken in the top of each, not wide enough to allow too much evaporation, but enough that a flame could reach the contents and set them afire. He affixed a long wick to each, long enough to reach from the keg to the top of the wall.
Well, there's probably a better way to do this, but I can't think of what it is.
Saul, obviously far more confused than Jason, just blinked and nodded. Jason reined the team back through the gate to rejoin the wagon that had gone before them and distributed the casks of whale oil. The wagon bumped along.
Lighter load.
By far.
For now, the wagon was empty. Jason was too relieved to have dug his ditch and put the oil and kerosene in place to pay much attention to Saul's unease. He chalked it up to an understandable nervousness over what was to come. He just hoped that Saul wouldn't go out of his head again and chase him around the square with a loaded gun. He hadn't much cared for that.
What time you got?
9. 7 after, if you're wanting I should be precise.
Jason nodded. After 9, and still no Apache. Not a single solitary brave. Maybe they had run them off for good. Or maybe they were still out there, lurking or plotting. Or something. He pulled the wagon back into the circle around the well.
That's that.
Saul didn't say anything. He just climbed down. Jason followed suit. A couple of the men from the sales train ran to unhitch the horses, and Jason started for the front gate, which a carriage had just come through. Jenny and Matt stepped out of the carriage. Jason's initial glee turned to annoyance at the sight of Matt, but he walked toward them anyway. He could put up with Matt for a second or two for a chance to see his sister here in town and away from that damn ranch. Jenny saw him coming and broke away from Matt to run to Jason. She fairly leapt into his arms and began to sob into his chest. It wasn't like Jenny, not at all. And at first, Jason thought she was hurt. But then he glanced up at Matt and saw the look of annoyance on his face and realized she'd either had a good scare or a good fight with Matt. Both possibilities left him angry. He didn't say anything, though. He just tucked Jenny's shoulders beneath his arm and slowly led her back to the office. He would have taken her home, but their house was likely still chock full of milchers. He hadn't seen any of them yet this morning, and he didn't imagine it would do Jenny any good to spend a morning with them. At any time, let alone today. Saul watched Jason lead his sister to the jail and suddenly remembered that he had folks to check on, too. He made his way over to the hardware store and let himself in. Rachel and the boys were still where he'd left them, in the back room on the first floor. Nobody was going upstairs until this Apache trouble was over for certain, and if Jason expected more trouble, Saul was the first to agree with him. He had known Jason long enough and seen him in action enough times to trust him with his life and those of his family, even if he wasn't Jewish. But then, Jason couldn't help that, could he? A man was what he was born to be.
Rachel, my love, how are you feeling this morning?
Lonely. Lost. Sit, Saul. I'm better. So, how is it out there?
It goes well. Jason is on the job.
And what of the Indians? The boys told me some of it.
Yes, I suppose they could not keep it to themselves. Although we need to discuss what they were doing out front, by the windows.
The youngest ducked behind the old broken rocking chair and covered his backside, locking his hands behind him.
Later.
What is Jason doing?
He has had us up half the night digging a shallow moat. That's what he called it, a moat around the town. And first thing this morning, he had us drizzle whale oil and put kerosene kegs in it. I think he plans to set it afire when the Apache attack again. But I can't see how it will do any good. The soil, if one can call it that, soaked up the oil the moment we poured it in, and the kerosene he had us leave in the kegs.
Rachel's face screwed up, and he knew that she was deep in thought. Not so deep, he hoped, that she would misunderstand the foolishness of Jason's ploy. Quite suddenly, her face lit up.
Ah, yes, Saul, yes. I see. We are lucky to have such a wise sheriff. Oh, Saul, don't you see? Don't you remember the time you burnt down my father's storage shed?
Saul nodded. One match dropped 10 feet from the building, only smoking, and whoosh.
Why do you bring this up now, woman? It must have happened 10 years ago.
Because, my poor dear Saul, the place where you dropped your match was the place where my mother used to pour out her old cooking oil. The oil stays in the ground for many years. It is like a wick, a dirt wick, if there is such a thing. That is why they had such a hard time putting it out.
Ah. Once again, our boy Sheriff is three steps ahead of me. But not you, Rachel. No, not ahead of my Rachel.
I hate him, Jason. I wanted the Apache to come and kill him, even if they killed me too.
Jason hadn't wanted it to happen like this, but he had wanted her to leave Matt and to come home. She needed to grow up, and she needed somebody besides Matt McDonald to do it with. Someone besides her husband. But she'd thrown Jason out of the mix when she married Matt. It was against everything he'd ever been taught, breaking up a marriage, especially his own sister's. He tried to think like his father. What would Jedediah Fury have done? Jedediah wouldn't have allowed Jenny to run off with Matt in the first place, that's what, Jason thought with a frown. Never. Not in a million years would he have allowed his only daughter to wed such a cowardly little pissant as Matthew McDonald. Well, Jason hadn't exactly allowed it either, but the Reverend Milcher had wed them just the same. And now Matt was his brother-in-law.
Jason, I want to come home. And not just to visit, to stay.
Are you absolutely sure, Jenny?
Yes, I'm positive.
You were positive you wanted to marry him too, Jen.
I know. I was wrong. I should have listened to you.
Of course you can come back, honey. Of course you can. But you'll have to stay with me here for a while. Our house is full of Milchers.
Why on earth?
Didn't you see the church when you came through the gate?
Wasn't paying attention.
They got burnt out from the steeple down to the ground.
Oh. All right. I'd like to stay here with you. Is Megan here in town still?
She's around, or she was last time I checked. I can go look for her, but if you hear anybody shout Apache, you head back here in a hurry. You understand me? We're not out of this thing yet, baby sister. Keep close.
Jason, why didn't you stay to talk to me when you came by the house yesterday?
He couldn't answer her. Couldn't tell her that he would just as soon slug her husband in the face as speak to him. And so he simply walked out the door. Once outside, he walked right into Megan.
Sorry.
Jason Fury, why don't you watch where you're going? You nearly...
Megan?
What?
Jenny's inside. She wants to talk to you.
And I want to talk to her, too.
Take it easy on her, Megan, please. And tell her I've been taking good care of her filly.
All right, Jason. She'll be happy to hear about Nugget. Does she have a rough time of it? Jenny, not Nugget, I mean.
I'm guessing she did, but it didn't have anything to do with the Apache.
I didn't think so.
It was nearing noon at the Apache camp, and Lone Wolf had spent the morning questioning Strangle's coyotes about what he'd seen at the Whitestown. So far, he wasn't getting any information, at least none that did him any good. Strangle's coyotes were so tired that his head was wobbling on his neck and his eyelids fluttered. He had started back before dawn, long before light, long before Jason had begun to implement the second part of his plan.
There was nothing more?
Nothing.
They dug a ditch. They are crazy, these whites.
Crazy.
Go, sleep, and when you awake, make arrows. Many arrows. We will need them tomorrow.
We attack again in the morning.
Go and sleep. We need each man at his best.
At last, Strangle's coyotes left, and Lone Wolf fell once again into thought. What could the whites be planning to dig this ditch? The Apache's ponies would not stumble in it. They were all surer of foot, more nimble than the mountain goats. Perhaps the whites intended to divert the stream into it. But again, what good would that do them? It would only be a waste of water, and according to Strangle's coyotes, it was now shallow enough to be easily forded. Even when it was at its raging height, the river still did not meet the tops of the bank, let alone the height of the ditch. Lone Wolf did not think even the craftiest white could make water run uphill. Slowly, he shook his head. Whatever they were planning, his braves would overcome. Tomorrow they would spread themselves around the whole of the wall's perimeter. Tomorrow, they would be victorious. And 2 days later, they would celebrate their victory with the rest of the tribe. There would be much feasting on the white men's cattle, and drinking of tiswin, and dancing. He was sure of it. The whites were many in number, and had fire sticks with which to shoot them, but they were as stupid as women when it came to planning. They would fail, and his men would sack and strip the town. Of this, Lone Wolf was certain. The wagon train. A very tired Randy Mankiller sat down next to his wife in their wagon.
Finished?
Yeah, all done.
The whaler's wagon had hit a rock and broken an axle early in the morning, and it had taken half a day to unload it so it could be blocked up, and then the other half to fit the axle. Thank goodness that old crank Olin had brought a spare, get it back down on the ground, and load it back up again. Altogether, he figured they'd made about 25 feet of travel for the entire day. He guessed he must have looked plenty disgusted, because suddenly he felt a small, cool hand on the back of his neck, then felt it begin to gently knead the muscles there.
Good. That's awful good, honey.
He then felt a second hand join the first. Their movements, although still gentle, became firmer.
Feeling better, I take it? You're making those yummy sounds again. You know, like the ones you made last night when we made...
Hush, honey. There's somebody over here.
A big old worrywart. Nobody can hear us. They're all either too far away or they're asleep.
Not me.
Of course not you.
Tomorrow will be better. And we'll... we'll make it up tomorrow.
Of course we will. You just relax for now. You deserve it.
Deserve it.
That's my boy. Just sleep. Just sleep.
When night fell, the Milchers were back in their own house. The town had pitched in to make the second floor habitable again, although it was barely that, and Jenny was back at Jason's home and sharing a room with Megan, who was still too mad at everybody and everything to go to her own ranch. Jason was planning on camping out at the jail again. He would much rather have spent the night with the girls. At least he had eaten with them. Jenny, who alternately beamed and laughed or burst into tears for no particular reason, had fried a chicken. And Megan had looted their overgrown garden for the greens to make a salad, peas to steam or boil, and new potatoes to bake with cheese. Aside from Jenny's occasional bouts of tears, it had been the best meal he'd had in a long time. Well, the chicken was a little burned, but it still tasted great. Now, as he patrolled the streets for the last time, nodding to the odd townsmen still up, he almost began to feel as if things might be all right again. Almost. There were still a few things wrong. The Apache, for instance, and the fact that at the moment, he had Matt McDonald locked up back at the jail. He was sort of hoping to walk around until Matt fell asleep, as a matter of fact. He checked his pocket watch. It was a quarter till midnight. Jason guessed it was time he turned in. He could always just shoot Matt, he supposed. He grinned at the thought of it and opened the door. It was darker inside than out, with no sound to be heard except for Matt's snores. Good. He was in luck. Lighting a lantern, he turned the flame low and proceeded to the spare cell. He took his boots off, set his hat aside, stretched out on the cot, and blew out the lantern. Matt didn't stir through any of it. Jason closed his eyes and fell asleep almost before his lashes touched his cheeks. At about 3 in the morning, Ward Wanamaker, over at the Stablecombe Hospital, woke and felt as lively as he had ever felt in all his life. Well, except for his arm and shoulder, that is. But even that felt a whole lot better than it had before he fell asleep. Whenever that had been. But everybody around him was sleeping. He figured he'd go over to the jail and try to make himself useful. Or maybe find someone to talk to anyway. He started for the stable door. Wincing when he accidentally rubbed his shoulder on the edge of the doorway, he gripped his shoulder and went on. He found the jail dark once he rounded the well and its circle of wagons, and he opened the door thinking that he'd have the place to himself. But somebody was snoring. The lantern had been moved, but he felt his way to the desk and grabbed a candle and a match from the top drawer. The candle lit. He held it aloft and peered into the cells.
Jason?
What? What? Oh, crud. Ward, what the hell are you doing over here?
Well, in case you forgot, this is where I work.
At 3 a.m.
Night shift?
What's going on?
Mad? What in tarnation are you doing here?
Shut up, the both of you.
Well, what's Matt doing here? Did he stick up his own bank or something?
Nah, the jackass was going to go home right at dusk, trying to ride home in that carriage, big as life.
I was perfectly safe, Fury. I had a rifle under the seat and...
Shut up.
Jason stood up and walked out of the cell, his boots on his feet and his hat on his head.
Now that I'm awake, I'm awake. Thank you, Ward.
Sorry, Jason.
It's done. I'm going to check the town again.
Why?
Why? Why should I check my town when it's done nothing but fend off Apache for the last couple of days? Well, all right, not today, but that's just a lull in the proceedings. I fully expect...
No. But first, where'd you hide the dang lamp?
In my cell.
Shrugging, Ward went to the first cell, retrieved the lamp, and headed back toward the desk.
He's crazy, you know. Those Apache aren't going to attack us again.
Ward sat down behind the desk and applied the lit candle wick to the lantern, turned up the flame, and opened the newest seed catalog.
You know that for sure, Matt.
No, genius. Just have the common sense I was born with. Those Indians were scared. They're beaten. They're gone for good.
Uh-huh. You figured that out while we was getting shot full of arrows and scalped and such here in town?
Apache don't scalp, you moron.
You put the fear of God in them from down in that cellar of yours?
Shut up, Ward.
Night, Matt.
Jason was surprised to find Saul awake and outside as he made his rounds. Saul seemed just as startled as Jason.
Oh, hello, Jason.
What the heck are you doing up and awake, Saul?
That crate in the storeroom isn't very conducive to slumber, I'm afraid.
Wouldn't Rachel?
No, her cut's too narrow, and she's still hurting.
Sorry.
Thanks. What's preying on your mind, Jason?
What makes you ask that?
Something is, isn't it? You're up walking the streets at 3 a.m, aren't you?
I'm just nervous about tomorrow, I guess. I wish somebody around here had a big-time mining operation going.
Hmm?
For a supply of dynamite, you know?
You're wanting to burn them, then blow them up too? Would you not call that overkill?
I reckon you're right, Saul. I just wish I was more sure of that thing with the oil.
And kerosene.
Right, and kerosene.
It will work, Jason. My Rachel says so, and she is hardly ever wrong in matters of importance.
Hardly ever wrong. Makes me feel a whole lot better, Saul. Thanks.
I didn't mean to make you feel that way, Jason. I was just saying that Rachel explained to me what you were doing and why it would work. She remembered how I accidentally set her father's shed on fire just after we were wed. There was a place out behind the shed where her mother used to toss the used-up cooking oil and...
Right. I've got my rounds to finish, Saul.
I'm sorry if I'm keeping...
I'll see you later.
Jason stalked off. As he moved on down the boardwalk, he began to regret his attitude toward Saul. He shouldn't have spoken, or not spoken to Saul that way. It was he who was the problem, not Saul. And it was he who was acting like a 6-year-old. Without thinking, he slugged the front wall of Copeland's millinery...
Out!
...and immediately regretted it. And was angry at Copeland for not painting his wife's hat and ribbon shop earlier, because he ended up with splinters in his knuckles.
Damn it.
He tugged at the splinters with teeth and fingernails, and still didn't have all of them out by the time he ended up back at the jail again. The light was on, and he walked in to find Matt McDonald asleep in his cell, and Ward Wanamaker dozing at the desk, his head pillowed on an open seed catalog. Jason walked over to the desk, moved Ward's elbow enough to open the side drawer, and pulled out the tweezers, all without waking Ward, then sat down in the opposite chair and pulled the lamp closer. His nose inches from his sore knuckles, which in the light looked like the spine of a ready porcupine, he began pulling splinters.
That's quite a mess you got there.
Let a man know you're awake, why don't you?
Sorry, didn't know you was so interested. Aiming at somebody in particular?
Myself. I missed.
You don't say. Must have been some kind of a piece of lumber got in your way.
Yep. Was attached to the millinery.
Worst kind. I hear they're vicious.
Jason nodded and attached his tweezers to a new splinter. It was the last one he could see extending from the skin, although he could surely feel more of them in there. Ward suddenly lifted his head.
You hear that?
Hear what?
Hush up. Listen.
Jason held his tongue, but he still didn't hear anything out of place.
You're getting daffy, Ward. What time is it anyway?
Jason could just make out the first streaks of red and orange on the western horizon. It made him feel itchy inside. Ward looked past Jason's shoulder to the clock on the wall.
5:15.
Jason's internal alarm went off. At any minute, they could be swarming with Apache.
Wake up Matt and send him over to the stables with a rifle. You stay put, Gimp. They make it over the wall, shoot yourself.
Shoot myself?
You do it, it'll be fast. They do it for you, it'll take days. You pick.
Jason went to Saul's place first. Saul had dozed off on the bench. Jason walked up beside him and shoved his shoulder.
Saul, wake up.
Hmm?
Come on, Saul, up and at him.
What?
I said get up. It's practically dawn and the Philistines are coming.
What?
I'm sorry for how I was before. But it's morning and the Apache are about to attack. Or might be about to, understand?
Dawn, Apache, right. I'll wake the others.
You take the south and east sides. I'll take the north and the west.
Indeed.
Treat Paris walked up to the wagon where Jesse Figg, the freight wagon's other driver, was mending a piece of leather. Beneath his shaggy brown hair, Treat's boyish face was scrunched up like a perplexed monkey's. Treat often found himself exasperated with Jesse and his slow wits. Nothing was worse than a one-eyed mule skinner, unless it was a one-eyed mule skinner from Tennessee, which Jesse was.
Huh? Did you hear what he said?
What? What who said?
That kid sheriff they got. Sheriff was just here. Did you hear what he said, any of it?
Huh? Who was here?
Aw, craps, Jesse, you beat everything. You know that.
Treat? Treat, what you talking about? Treat?
But Treat just kept on walking to the stable. His Winchester was snug in his hand as he climbed one of the ladders behind the stable and came to rest on the white plank affixed to the stockade wall. A series of them circled the wall as far as he could see, and every 10 feet or so was a man with a rifle or a handgun, with more men on the way.
Morning.
Morning, Mayor.
It's just Salmon. You're Treat, right? From the wagon train.
That's me.
What did we pay you for the oil and kerosene, Treat?
Well, I don't know. You have to ask our wagon master.
I will.
Anybody checked the Fordin place lately, Salmon?
No. Everybody's been a little busy in case you weren't paying attention.
Sorry. Just wondering when we might be able to pull out.
You'll have to ask Jason about that. The sheriff, that is. I imagine he'll want you fellas to stick close for a while. For your own good, naturally.
Naturally.
Hey, Treat.
Decide to join us?
You fellas see anything out there, engine-wise?
Nothing.
You there! Light your wicks! Same for you others! Light your wicks!
Wake up, man! Light that wick!
Treat suddenly remembered the wicks they'd run from the kegs the day before, and he reached toward his pocket for a lucifer while he searched the tops of the posts. The wicks were spaced out about every 20 feet or so, he recalled. Amazingly, Jesse found it before he did and pointed it out. Treat grabbed the wick before Jesse had a chance to and flicked his lucifer into life. Once he was certain the wick was burning, he let it drop to the ground outside, 20 feet below. If he'd been a genuflecting sort of man, he would have crossed himself. As it was, he just said a silent prayer that it wouldn't go out until it ignited that keg of kerosene and all that whale oil they'd poured out into the ditch. On the north wall, Jason heard Kendall's order to light the kegs and had repeated it as Salmon had, to his right and to his left. He figured that the Apache would likely come around to the north side pretty quickly once they saw the fire and smoke coming from the ditch on the south. That is, if the ditch caught, if the kerosene worked, if there was still enough oil in the ditch, oil close enough to the surface anyhow to burn for a while, if he hadn't gone stark raving loony, if. The first keg that caught was on the southeast corner, and only because one of the boys tired of the fuse burning for so long and just shot it. had spread quickly down the ditch, feeding on the whale oil and imploding keg after keg of kerosene. The explosion surprised not only the men on the wall, but three or four braves who had made it down into the ditch and were abruptly blown high into the air and out of sight. Soon, every man jack of the men on the walls was shooting at the barrels as if it were a carnival game, and just as quickly, the perimeter was encircled by a moat of smoke and flame. The men in the town couldn't see the Indians anymore, but they hadn't gone away. As Jason had suspected, the war chief sent half his men around the town to the north, and they quickly had Fury basically surrounded. As instructed, the Apache backed off far enough to stay clear of shots from the walls and settled in to wait. Even the Apache knew that a fire could not burn forever, not even one so big as the white men had made for their town. Inside, the inhabitants were starting a premature celebration. That is, until Jason put a stop to it, but the damage had been done. Women were already starting to venture timidly out into the streets. More than half the men who had been on the south wall were down on the ground, and a bandaged and heavily medicated Raleigh Bigston had declared free drinks for the next hour. Jason moved through the crowds, trying to get men back up on the wall, trying to get the women inside, but he enjoyed little success.
Oh, come on, let go, Jason! Quit being such a worrywart.
Jason angrily stalked off. What did these people have, a death wish? He knew those Apache were still out there, waiting for the fire to die down, waiting for a break in the line, waiting for the chance to get just a few men inside and murder them all. If there was one thing an Apache could do, it was wait. Jason didn't want his sister killed by the Apache. He didn't much like the idea for Megan either. And when he told Ward to shoot himself, he hadn't been kidding. The Indians must be plenty ticked off by now. And if they got hold of any of his people, they were liable to work out their frustration on them in the worst possible way anybody could imagine. He saw a few lonely figures still on the south wall and picked out Saul's form up on the planks, his back against the stockade wall. Jason broke into a trot and hurried over.
Now what?
Well, I seem to have lost control of the situation, so don't ask me.
You didn't think they would just see our fires and go home?
No way.
Then I was right to stay here when the others left. Even our Mayor Kendall has made a trip to Bigston's.
Jason wasn't surprised. It seemed like half the town and all of the wagon drivers were inside Bigston's or outside drinking in the street. He just hoped that they could shoot when they were drunk and that they could actually hit their bobbing and weaving targets. Hell, half of them couldn't hit a bullseye target when they were 10 feet away and sober as judges. And that was on a good day. Jason sank to his heels and rested his brow on his knees.
If you are praying, I hope your God is listening to you today.
I hope so, too. Hope somebody's God is. But we're going to need more than divine intervention.
What? More than God you think you're needing?
I'm just afraid I'm going to have to get him a little help, Saul.
Help?
Trust me.
Don't take offense, Jason, but I'd rather put my faith in the Lord.
Thinking that he'd rather do that too if only the situation permitted it, Jason hurried across the street. But he didn't stop at the jail. He headed west until he came to the first house off the square, which was his house.
Jenny? Jen, Megan, you here?
What is it?
I want to talk to both of you. Sit.
What is it, Jason?
Jenny and Megan looked at each other as if silently confirming that he was crazy. And maybe he was, but he went on anyway, went on in a rush, barely stopping for air. And the girls listened open-mouthed, but they listened. The wagon train. Bound and determined to make up the day they'd lost, Blake and the others ate while they rode or drove. Blake himself was riding his horse, Buck, today, and keeping his cup of coffee balanced on the wagon seat beside his wife, Laura, and their infant son. Laura drove a team as well as any man, and he had no worries about her, other than the fact that she was always so enthralled with the beauty of the mornings out here, the colors in the dawn sky, the soft butter yellow and lavenders and blues and pinks of the vast stretches of wildflowers in the distance, she managed to stay on track. Becky Mankiller was just as adept, but Olin Whaler's wife, Lena, was a tad shaky as a teamster. It didn't help that her boys were more intent on horsing around than on giving her any assistance. And her husband was riding far out to their right side, paying no mind to anybody or anything. Randy Mankiller rode up beside Blake and nodded hello.
You want to kill them Whaler boys yourself, or can I?
Oh, you don't need to go that far, Randy.
Oh, all right. I'll just take out Olin then.
Easy does it there, buddy.
You're taking all the fun out of this for me, Blake.
Sorry to be such a joy killer.
When you figure we'll hit Fury?
Maybe a couple of days, if we can avoid attracting any Apache's attention. Maybe longer.
You don't got any idea where we are, do you?
Not a clue. I'm just trying to follow what trail the express rider left.
That's not much.
Tell me about it. When we get closer, though, we'll cut to the old Mormon trail. That'll be easier to follow.
What, with the broken glass and jugs and all?
Check.
Actually, Blake was searching for the Mormon trail right now. He was weary of traveling blind and wanted some nice, shiny broken glass or even some old worn trail ruts to follow.
Hey, Rev!
Both Randy and Blake looked over toward Olin, who was broadly waving at them, although he was still scowling.
Found the trail! Over this way!
You reckon we should take a look?
Might as well.
The two set off at a lope toward Olin, and the four wagons slowly followed them. Lone Wolf's stomach told him it was time for the midday meal, but he was fixated on the curtain of smoke still rising from the ditch around the town. One of his men, Antelope, rode up from down the line. He had been one of the braves to ride north, and Lone Wolf looked toward him anxiously. Antelope slid from his pony and approached, bowing his head in acknowledgement to his war chief. Lone Wolf returned the gesture and held his hand out to indicate that Antelope might be seated on the blanket across the small cook fire from him.
What news do you carry?
The condition is the same there as here. Much smoke and fire, so that a man may not see past it nor find a path through it. And it is the same in all directions, Lone Wolf.
And what is it they burn which lasts for so long?
It is not wood or dried cactus or dun. It is as if they have figured a way to make the earth itself sprout fire. It is like magic. Do you think it possible that their god has intervened for them? Do you think that...
No! It is not possible. The god is no god at all. How can he be? How can a single god control everything? Wind, fire, sorrow, happiness, rain, the animals, and on... Not possible!
Then what? What have they done to make the earth burn as if it were made of coal?
They did not fill the ditch with coal, did they?
It is the earth itself that burns. They dug down to the place where the ground is hard and soft all at once and set it on fire. It burns long and steady, as we have all seen.
Lone Wolf shook his head. This layer of ground had been long known to his people. They and their neighbors the Hopi, as well as other tribes in the area, used it to make pots. It did not catch flame and smoke when they fired it in their kilns. It did not catch fire at all. How could it burn now? What reason could there be for it to catch fire and hold it for so long? He did not know. At least, he couldn't think of an immediate answer.
You can leave. I will send for you if need be. Get yourself sustenance.
Would you like me to bring you some food?
No, I have pemmican.
In truth, Lone Wolf was not eating. He was waiting for a sign of some kind to show him the how and why of the smoke and fire before he would allow food to touch his lips. He had already sent three braves to the creek to haul water to put it out, to no avail. They said they hauled much water, and it had no effect. It sank into the hot, thirsty soil beside the clay, and that was all. It neither increased nor decreased the amount of flame, but slightly intensified the smoke rising from it. It was a great puzzlement. Curly and the other hands had spent the night down in the bunkhouse hidey hole after a long day with no boss around. They rose carefully with the dawn, and seeing no sign of Indians, had made coffee and bacon and toast for their breakfasts. It wasn't much compared to their usual fare, but they figured it was better to travel on light stomachs for now. They'd been right. At 6:30, Curly spotted thick gray smoke rising to the north. Town. He couldn't be certain what the source was, the Indians or the townspeople, but he figured it wouldn't do him any good to look on the sunny side of things. He rounded up the boys, easy, for they were huddled in a corner of the bunkhouse, and everybody took to the cellar again. Curly told the boys that if he had to spend much more time down here, he was applying for miner's wages. The laughter was minimal. They sat down there for what seemed like hours, and was, before they heard the Indians hit them. At first, it was distant and far away, as if they were ransacking the main house first. It made sense. Curly's lips twisted into a scowl. Mr. and Mrs. McDonald had a lot of nice things, things they got from the occasional freighters that came through Fury. And Mr. McDonald had a lot of money to spend. That was probably pretty Mrs. McDonald's curio cabinet, with all its glass shelves and little figurines. Mostly horses they were. What a shame, Curly thought, with a slow shake of his head. Some of those little figures were downright cunning. Having left the girls back at the house, scurrying for rifles and ammunition, Jason made his way down to Raleigh Bixton's place, where he walked in the back door and took Abigail aside.
From now on, you tell every man you serve that it's his last, and as soon as he finishes up, he's to report to his station on the wall. You got me?
Yes, Jason. Why? Isn't the trouble over with?
No, it's not, Abby. And after the last man's been served his last drink, you get yourself someplace safe, unless... How are you with a rifle?
Me? Well, I'd hardly know which end to point.
And get yourself someplace safe, for sure.
Down in the cellar where Raleigh keeps the good stuff?
Yeah, and take Raleigh down there with you. He's not ready to climb up the wall yet, and the hospital's pretty full up.
All right, Jason. And about that wall, well, between you and me, Raleigh can't climb it even when he's Sunday go-to-meeting sober.
Good girl.
As Jason turned away again and walked out through the crowd, Abigail smiled at him admiringly. Once Jason got clear of the crowd, he looked up the street to see Megan and Jenny headed his way, each loaded down with a rifle and a small leather pouch of ammunition. He waved to get their attention and met them in the middle of the street.
We're ready. Where do you want us?
For the moment, I want you rounding up the other women who know which end of a rifle to point.
And once we finish that?
Then I want you up on the wall. Fight like you would for our father, Jenny.
I will, Jason.
And if you see your husband, don't shoot him. Save the bullet for a deserving Apache.
Take all the fun out of things, Jason.
I know.
Rifle balanced over his shoulder, Jason walked off down toward the jail.